Hey everyone, this is Joy, your newest DJ here at KDLL. Every song has a story and every life has a soundtrack. Join me Sunday nights from 7 to 9 for Songs and Stories, where we'll share some stories and invite guests from your community to play their soundtracks. Right here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. So now we're going to have an interview with Jake and James Wade, two of the four Wade brothers behind Bearpaw River Brewing of Wasilla. Hey guys, how you doing today?
Hey, good.
Yeah, good, Bill.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. First up, I got to say, congratulations on being one of the 50 fastest growing breweries in the United States last year. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you. That was a pretty cool recognition.
Surprise for us, really. We didn't expect it. And, but glad to see it.
Yeah, so you guys now, what are you? You've been open 3 years?
I think we're about 2.5 years old.
2.5, okay. Yeah, because you guys opened in December?
December of 2015. So, I mean, there was only like 2 weeks left in 2015. So.
Right, that's what I was remembering. At the end of the year, 2015.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about your guys' background and how you ended up in the brewing business?
I mean, it all started with home brewing. My wife and I were living in Boise, Idaho, and I was just obsessed with home brewing. And I spent all our money on it kind of thing and brewed every week, all the time. I really wanted to get a job in the industry, so I worked for a little brewery down there for a while. I worked for a distributor. I worked for a homebrew store. And so I was just trying to submerge myself in the industry and drinking a lot of beer. And when we moved back up here, the four of us, the four brothers, were wanting a project to do together. And so we thought a brewery would be a great idea.
Describe your brewing operation.
Sure, yeah. So we're a 10-barrel production brewery here in Wasilla. We've got a little tap room. I think it's 800 square feet. And people can come in here and drink beer here and take beer to go. And then we sort of have our brewery manufacturing space in the back. It's a pretty open space, although it's getting smaller and smaller in there. And so, yeah, customers can come in and hang out and talk to us and kind of see what's going on in the brewery when we're canning and packaging and stuff, which happens almost every day now. There's a lot going on in the brewery. So it's definitely, when you're in here, you know, you feel like you're in a brewery, not just some extended tap room.
You guys have definitely made a big move into canning. I mean, I see them on the shelves down here. I know you're doing your milk stout and your IPA. What other ones are you offering in cans now?
So we have three beers that are sold through specialty imports. And so we have our Hatcher Pass Pale Ale, which is a newer one that we've added into cans, the Matt Made Milk Stout, and then the Frontiersman IPA. So those three beers are the ones that you see around. James, do you want to talk about our kind of one-off?
Yeah, so in addition to those core beers that specialty is distributing for us, we also have a program where we do one-off beers. We have two brewers here, Jake and Damien, and when they get inspired to try something, we've been able to get those into cans, and we sell them out of the tap room, but also there's a few places around town, Club Bodega in Anchorage, Brown Jug in Anchorage, Connect Country Liquor, who get a few cases of these more experimental one-off brews.
You guys are obviously not doing crowlers then, right, if you're canning into regular-sized cans?
Yeah, 12-ounce cans. We've thought about doing 16s, but for right now, we're going to stick with 12-ounce cans.
You've also done some bottling, as I recall.
Yep, we bottled the Frontiersman and the Matt Made. You can find those pretty much all over the place. They're in Fred Meyer now. I think they're going to be in Cars in the fall. And the stout, the Matt Made, is also at Costco. I made the bottler, I guess it was almost a year and a half, 2 years ago now. And so it's kind of like every bottling session is a little different. You know, it's not a big commercial bottler, but it does the job, and it was a good way to kind of get us into packaging. And so we started with the 22s and then later moved into the cans. And so the 22-ounce bottles was a good step into packaging, which just allowed us to get beer, you know, in more places on the shelves.
If you were to break down your operation percentage-wise, about how much do you figure you distribute or your production, and how much do you figure you sell out of the taproom there?
I don't know a number. I don't even have a percentage, but, I mean, it's way, way more volume distributed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Jake, what do you like most about being a brewer, and what do you like least?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the most fun thing that we really actually only started doing it kind of late last year, last fall, you know, when we brew our core beers, it's repetition, you know, it's over and over again, the same thing. And it's great because you can really get opportunities to really dial in those processes and practices. But the best thing that I like about being a brewer is coming up with new beers that you'll never see again. And those make really fun brew days. And Damien is our main brewer, really. He's just a rock star. And we spend weeks talking about beer, talking about a new brew, you know, before we do it. And so really, it's a really fun environment, even the weeks leading up to brewing a new batch of beer, because you're talking about what yeast to use and dry hopping techniques and all kinds of stuff. And so really, on the experimental side of things, that's where I'm the happiest.
What do you like the least? Whenever I brew, it's shoveling out the mash tun, but
yeah,
you guys may have your own issues.
Yeah, I guess when things break, I think that, you know, it's like a manufacturing business with a lot of little working parts and pumps and hoses and it's a glycol chiller. It seems like every other day I was literally just down there now fixing something, you know, I had to bring the tools from the house. It seems like every other day I'm having to tune something up, you know, or fix something, which isn't the most fun, but that's kind of part of it.
Well, speaking of fun and one-off beers, why don't you guys tell everybody a little bit about Valley Trash? I know you're excited about that one.
Yeah, this is a really fun project for us, something we're really looking forward to. You know, when we were younger, although not too much younger, we were in the Great Bear, the pub there in Wasilla, drinking Valley Trash. And that pub closed in 2009, and so we thought we'd bring it back. And so that's what we've done. We got in touch with some of the owners of the Great Bear, and even the former head brewer of the Great Bear, Kai Cornielsen, flew in from Bethel just to brew with us just last week. And now it's bubbling away in a fermenter. And so, yeah, Valley Trash Day, as we are now calling it, is on August 4th, Saturday, August 4th. So we're looking forward to some good beer and some good times with, you know, with local people from the Valley.
Well, I know you guys certainly went all out when I heard that you'd gone to the trouble to tank in Wasilla City water to use instead of using your well water. Could you explain why Valley Trash is so iconic a brew up there in Wasilla?
There was a politician some years ago that kind of referred to the people out here as being trashy. And so the Great Bear kind of took ownership of that and decided to call one of their beers Valley Trash. Crazy how much power there is in a name, but it really just took off for them, and it became their most popular beer. Even now, I mean, long before we even decided to kind of replicate Valley Trash, people come into our tap room and say, have you ever heard about a beer called Valley Trash? And so anyways, it's still talked about. It's been about 10 years ago now, even though it's not around. And so we thought that it would just be a really fun project to recreate it and to try to make it as authentic as we could. And so I happen to have an old Grundy tank that I acquired a couple years ago that was actually from the Great Bear. And so I put it in the back of my truck, drove it over into the city. There's a place in Wasilla where you can get bulk city water. And so it took me, I think, 4 trips, filled up the Grundy tank, came back here, pumped it through the carbon filter and then into my hot liquor tank so that we would have genuine Wasilla City water to brew with.
Well, I think everybody's looking forward to trying it. And you said it's going to be released on August 4th, right?
Yep, Saturday, August 4th.
Great. You got any other new brews coming in the near future that you want to tell everybody about?
I mean, we got so many projects in the works and so many ideas for potential projects, but maybe the next 4 I can talk about. Jake and Damien have done over the past couple of months a couple of New England IPAs, which we really like, and I suppose that's a great litmus of, you know, the quality of a beer is whether or not you want to take your growler home. So we got a couple of New Englands that are coming out here over the next few months. We also have a newer project with a milkshake IPA that Jake and Damien are working on. And then we have an Oktoberfest lager, which we're looking to release around, you know, late September, Oktoberfest time, which is something we've talked about for the past couple of years but haven't done, but hopefully we'll be able to get that done here.
Those all sound great.
Yeah, we can't wait.
Here's a question for you to put your thinking caps on. You guys have exhibited phenomenal growth, obviously, in the last couple of years, being one of the top 50 in the country and everything. Where do you see yourselves in 5 years?
That's a hard question to answer. We want to grow, but production and volume really is not at the forefront of our business or our thinking. But we want to grow and get into some larger production numbers and keep making the best beer we can, really. Keep improving. It's a really great industry to be in because you can never be perfect at it. You know, you can always keep working at improving beers and making better beers the next day. And so that's really our goal. I mean, you know, we want to grow the business so that it's kind of built for longevity, and we want to be around a long time. And so we want to take our time and be careful. But yeah, produce a little bit more beer and have a lot of fun with it, doing projects like Valley Trash.
Well, hey, Jake and James, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We really do appreciate it. And looking forward to trying Valley Trash. Looking forward to seeing you at the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival on August 11th. So keep brewing the great beer, and we'll keep drinking it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Cheers.
Cheers. This is Bill Howell, drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We'll be back with our next segment.
Are you inspired to share your love of jazz? KDLL is looking for a DJ for a jazz music show to air 7 to 9 p.m. Mondays. Visit our website, kdll.org, or call 283-8433 for more information.
Now let's move on to this month's beer travel segment. We're going to talk about my hometown, New Orleans. When I was growing up there, the Big Easy was certainly no craft beer mecca, even if it did take a much more, let's say, relaxed attitude toward the consumption of alcohol than most of the rest of the country. The legal drinking age was 18, and friendly bartenders routinely stretched that a year or two younger for young folks that they knew personally. The only local beer available was from Dixie Brewing Company, and this old-time regional brand produced beer that tasted no better than the big national brands. I went on active duty and left New Orleans in 1984 and discovered craft beer elsewhere. That was then, this is now. When it opened in 1986, Abita Brewing Company primed the city for a maltier, hoppier future, although it's actually located about 30 miles north across Lake Pontchartrain. Still commonly associated with New Orleans, the Southeast's oldest craft brewery has since grown to become the country's 22nd largest beer producer. In Abita's wake, NOLA Brewing stepped onto the scene in 2008 with the intent to, quote, bring the history and tradition of beer back to New Orleans, end quote. Introducing locally themed beers like Hopatoulas, 7th Street Wheat, and Flambeau Red. Today, Louisiana's biggest city is home to several breweries with more on the way. So whatever the city's beer scene might temporarily lack in depth and national diversity, it more than makes up for in Creole character and regional loyalty, particularly to breweries in Louisiana and neighboring Mississippi. Here are some great places to go for a beer in the Crescent City. Ale on Oak. The owners of Next Door Wine Bar Oak opened this laid-back joint in 2015, connecting the two with a fan line alleyway courtyard. It has 30 taps and 70 bottles. While specializing in local brews, such as Chafunkta Kingfish Ale and Abita SOS, the bar welcomes a few out-of-towners, including Stone's Gope 2 IPA and Brooklyn's Sriracha Ace. It also serves up a tasty menu of elevated bar food, like debris fries topped with roast beef simmered overnight. The Avenue Pub. Rated among the top beer bars in the country, the Avenue Pub on St. Charles Avenue boasts more than 40 rotating taps between its main downstairs bar and smaller upstairs bar with an adjoining balcony. The selection of drafts and bottles from regional, national, and international breweries changes so often that bartenders keep the revolving menu on clipboards. They also consistently receive rare one-off keg specials not found elsewhere in town. The pub's long list of brews comes with a regularly updated menu of upscale bar food, such as a foie gras burger and a locally sourced St. James cheese plate. The Balcony Bar. Known for its massive second-floor balcony, this uptown hotspot serves the local crowd from 30 taps downstairs and 24 at the upstairs bar, when patrons can reach it. As late-night hours tick by, the louder and more crowded this place gets until people surrounding the bars are three rows deep and haggling for a taste of Tin Roof's Voodoo Bengal or Watermelon Wheat. Downstairs, stacks of quarters line the sides of the pool table for those who care to compete. Barcadia on Chapatula Street. For life-size Jenga, retro arcade machines, and classic 90s music to accompany a frothy pint, Barcadia is the place. Here patrons sip locally brewed drafts like Nola Hopatulus IPA or Irish Channel Stout and nosh on Szechuan-flavored wings or fries topped with Dead Guy barbecue sauce or Abita Andy Gator deli mustard. A converted garage door opens up to a small courtyard where patrons watch Warehouse District passersby. The Bayou Beer Garden. One of the newest beer bars in a short walk from Canal Street, this mid-city locale has already earned cred with locals thanks to a hefty menu of more than 100 regional and national bottled beers, plus a few gems like Bayou Tesh's Acadia on tap. Lush greenery surrounds the sprawling back courtyard where drinkers grab a tab or huddle on the masses of bar stools in front of flat screen above the smaller outside bar. Cooter Brown's Tavern. Perched at the uptown end of St. Charles Avenue, this watering hole was made for sports lovers who enjoy watching the big game on 17 flat screens and 2 8-foot drop-downs while choosing from a selection of about 40 taps and 400 domestic and imported bottles. As they drain pints, patrons can slurp down freshly shucked raw oysters or suck the heads of some of the city's finest boiled crawfish on the weekends. The Snooty Cooter, a recently opened back bar, boasts its own heavily rotated set of 20 taps. The Crescent City Brewhouse. A brewery, bar, and restaurant rolled into one, this French Quarter destination stands out with its range of traditional German styles poured out of shiny gold taps. The first brew pub in New Orleans, Crescent City's latest addition, is a menu of beer cocktails, which includes the Turbo Shandy, the house pilsner mixed with Sierra Mist, and a shot of flavored vodka. Kicking it up a notch, the Cajun Michelada combines their Vienna-style Red Stallion with Michelada mix and Cajun spices. DBA. While patrons may come here more for the live music than the beer, the four chalkboard menu selection doesn't hurt a night out on Frenchman Street. Look for regional favorites like Parrish Canebrake, Bayou Tesh Cocoudry, and Gnarly Barley Catahoula Common on draft, or savor the selection of wider-ranging bottles and cans from the likes of Chimay and Warsteiner. Just be careful not to spill a pint on the wildly dancing crowd. Evangeline on Decatur Street. This French Quarter darling complements its exposed brick interior with a cozy courtyard that has an eclectic bulb light draped overhead and a crackling fire pit tucked into the corner. This courtyard is the home of another bar with an additional draft selection. The beer lists include many regional options, including Covington's Pontchartrain Pilsner and Anonymous IPA. Industry Bar and Kitchen. For French Quarter locals, especially those in the service industry, know just where to go to get a cold one. Regarded as one of the most popular late-night haunts in the quarter, particularly for its extensive beer selection and legendary pizza, Industry Bar and Kitchen has a host of TVs for sports fans, in addition to a bar flanked with two sets of taps and a large glass door fridge behind it. The taps are dominated by regionals, including several Abita labels, but the bottle list offers a wider selection of national and international brews. Stein's Market and Deli. Arguably New Orleans' best bottle shop, Stein's offers an enormous selection of brews. In time of Mardi Gras season and St. Patrick's Day, Stein's thoughtfully rolls out a prime selection of canned beers that are perfect additions to the parade experience. While you browse, try one of the traditional deli sandwiches like the Mumbler, made with imported prosciutto and taglio on ciabatta bread. So that's an overview of where to drink in my hometown. It's taken New Orleans a bit to catch up with the craft beer scene, but now that it has, you can bet folks will be making up for lost time. As we say down home, laissez le bon temps rouler. We'll be right back here on Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Join us for the Veritas Variety Review as we aim to entertain while seeking what is true. With a plethora of mixed media, music, meandering discourse, and maybe a little mayhem. Tune into KDLL 91.9 at 7 p.m. on Saturday evenings, featuring a new thematic perspective with auditory stimulus to augment your analysis of the universe.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. And for our last segment this month, once again, let's talk beer gear. In this month's beer gear, I'm going to engage in a small amount of shameless self-promotion. As you may or may not know, since 2007, I've taught a class at Kenai Peninsula College in Soldotna called The Art and History of Beer. I'm going to be offering it again this fall semester. The class is taught on Tuesday evenings from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m., starting on August 28th and running through December 11th. While this is indeed a real one-credit college class, I can promise you that it will be the easiest college course you've ever taken. It's taught pass-fail, and the only way you can fail is not to come to class. And here's the best part. You actually get to sample about 15 different beers over the length of the course. While the college limits each student to a 2-ounce sample per class, it's still a chance to experience some of the most amazing beers from around the world. The cost of the beers is included in the cost of the course. Besides sampling beers, various lectures will delve into the process of brewing with tours of the three local breweries. We'll discuss how beer and brewing have impacted world, American, and Alaskan history. We'll study each of the famous brewing nations in turn, Britain, Belgium, and Germany, discussing the beer styles each is famous for. We'll look at the history of craft brewing in the U.S., the current challenges facing it, and its likely future trends. We'll talk about pairing beer with food and mix and match a beer with three different types of cheese in class. Whether you're an experienced craft beer drinker or someone who doesn't really know anything at all about beer, I guarantee this class will have something for you. Best of all, the homework assignment each week consists of these words, go drink some beer. If this beer class sounds like something you might be interested in, you can sign up for it on the college's website, www.kpc.alaska.edu, or you can call the college at 262-0330 and tell them you'd like to sign up for the beer class, and they will make it happen. I've taught this class about a dozen times now. Each time, both I and my students have really enjoyed ourselves. That's the wonderful thing about beer. There's always more to learn about it and more pleasure to be had from drinking it. I hope to see some of you in my class next month. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. As a closing quote, I'd like to leave you with a thought from Roger Green Ingersoll, noted attorney and orator in the late 19th century. What light is to the eyes, what air is to the lungs, what love is to the heart, beer is to the soul of man. On that happy thought, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you again next month. This is Bill Howell on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the